Okay, Tov, and welcome back to another ongoing series of Shirim and Daf Yomi. We are now in Ketubot, Daf Tet Zayin Amud Bet, near the bottom of the Amud, Haviru Lefanav, Lefanav Kol Shel Besorah, and we are now analyzing the Braita that we were introduced in the at the end of the previous podcast, at the beginning of the top of the Amud, which was an example of other things that were typically done at a wedding only of a Betulah, and therefore would constitute testimony that the girl had been a betulah when married, and thus should be awarded the 200 zuz. If you would find out kosh shel besorah, so they mentioned this thing called kosh shel besorah. My kosh shel besorah. Parenthetically, this points just to the interesting thing about awareness and about tradition, is that the Gemara is already unaware of the meaning of particular phrases or customs that in the times of the Tanaim were well known and could be referred to, and therefore we need an explanation. Ravada Barahava Kos Yain Shel Trumama Virin Lefaneha. They were Kos Shel Besorah, a Kos of announcement or of glad tidings, as it were. He says that means that they would take a Kos Yain of Truma and they would put it in front of her. Klomaru Uya Hitazula Chol Truma. To say this girl is so pure, she should be able to eat Truma, which of course is a little bit difficult. So, Matkavar Papa, Ato Almana Milo Achla Truma. What, only Betulah can eat Truma? What if an Almana marries a Kohen? She can't eat Truma? What if an Almana was a Bat Kohen and goes back to her house without kids or married a Kohen? Then she can eat Truma? Almana Papa, Zu Reshit Kitruma Reshit. Just like Truma is the first of the yield, so she is first, meaning this is her first marriage and Betulah. So again, there's confusion as to what the Kos Besorah means. Meaning they agree that a Kos Besorah is a cup of wine of Truma. The question is, what does it mean? He had a different version, not of what Kos Shel Besorah is, but of a different tradition that took place at weddings. They would pass a barrel of wine in front of her. Rana Bar Ahava spoke up again. He says, Betulah Mavrin Lefaneha Stuma, Be'ulah Mavrin Lefaneha Petucha. The symbolism is quite obvious, but if it was a betulah, then the barrel was sealed. If she was a betulah, the barrel was open. Amai, never coming betulah, becoming betulah, lo never claw. Why don't we just bring the barrel in front of the betulah and not bring a barrel in front of a betulah? It's a little bit shameful. The answer is zimni de tof samatayim, because the girl will get divorced or widowed. She'll grab matayim and claim, Yamra ana betulah havai, I was a betulah. The reason they didn't bring any wine before, any barrel before me, they were nanas. In other words, they didn't have a barrel, they forgot, it broke, whatever. But this way, if we have an affirmative testimony that the barrel was brought and the barrel was open, then we know she's a betulah and she can no longer claim betulah, and this was a custom that was done, perhaps in Rabbi Yehuda's town, in Usha, somewhere in the Galil, or he's reporting another custom. Tana Rabbanan, famous sugya, ketzad merakdin lifnei hakalah. Now, it doesn't mean, what sort of dancing do you do in front of a kala? It means, what do you say when you're dancing in front of the kala? What sort of things do you say? B'chamay omrim, kala kamot shehi. You describe her as is. All right, which means, you don't use hyperbole. It doesn't seem to mean that you're going to say bad things about her if she's not appealing or whatever, but you're going to only highlight the nice things and only in an honest way. Kala omrim, kala na'ava chasuda. And Beit Hillel said, every kala is beautiful, and is charming, and is graceful, and that's what you should say. So Amar Lahem Beit Shammai Beit Hillel, Harei Shehayta Chigeret O Suma. Beit Shammai says, Beit Hillel, well, what if she's blind? What if she's lame? What if she's less than perfect? Omrim La Kala Na'ava Chasuda, Ratzor Amar Midvar Sheker Techak. Look at the first pasuk on the page. You have to distance yourself from a lie. Now, the Isser of Midvar Sheker Terchak, or the warning of Midvar Sheker Terchak, is oriented towards two areas of interaction. One of them is commerce, where fraud is involved, and the other one is testimony, where perjury might be involved. Flattery, or saying things to people about how much you enjoy their household, or their cooking, whatever it is, when it's not really true, may or may not fall under this rubric, but Beit Shammai seems to feel that it does. How can you sing songs of praise to a girl about things that aren't true about her? I'm Roland Beit Hillel with Shammai. So Beit Hillel turns around and says, what if somebody bought something? This is a very big yisod in human interaction. If somebody buys something in the marketplace and he got a bad deal, Yishabchenu beinav or yiganenu beinav. Should you say nice things about the thing or bad things about the thing? In other words, you could be honest and say, oh, that thing, it's a piece of garbage. You paid way too much for it. It's trash. Or you could say, ooh, you got a nice deal. What a beautiful thing. Enjoy it. Of course you should praise it. Why? Because, of course, it's an already done thing. We're not talking about somebody who comes to you and says, should I buy this? Is this a good price? Should I look elsewhere? But somebody who says, look what I just bought, and he's obviously excited. So what are you going to do? There is absolutely no value whatsoever saying anything bad. In the same way, this guy already married the girl. And, by the way, that indicates here that the Ketzad Meraktin is for the purpose of the Chatan. And we'll see other examples of that forthwith, of things that we do as the celebrants and the dancers in front of the Chatan and Kala, towards the Kala to make the Chatan feel better about her. A person should always get along with people. He should always be nice with people. Right? So in other words, when somebody asks you a question, if it's something that has a practical implication and you can affect their decision, should I do this, should I do that, you want to tell them whatever they're able to hear, honestly. But if they've already done it, there's no value whatsoever to telling them that was a bad idea, it was a bad thing, because it's a dumb thing. Unless, of course, they ask you for a critical thing. Kiato Avdimi, Avdimi came to Babel, Amar, Hachi Mashu Kame Kaltam Arav, in Eretz Yisrael, this is what they sing in front of a Kala. Lo Kachal, Velo Shirak, Velo Firchus, V'yala Tchein. She doesn't need makeup, she doesn't need any other rouge, that's what Shirak is, evidently. She doesn't need any fancy hairdos. Yalachain, she is a charming girl. In other words, without all of those things, she's charming. Now, Samcha Rabbanu and Rabbi Zera, and Rabbi Zera got smicha, Sharu Lehachi. That's exactly what they said about him. Lo kachav, lo shirak, lo firchus, fi yalachain. The same exact song, meaning that they sang that this man is a perfect, beautiful Talmid Chacham without any need for external appurtenances. So when they gave smicha Rabbi Yami and Rabbi Yassi, the Talmid of Rabbi Yochanan, they said the following: Kol min dein v'chol min dein smuchu lana. These are the kind of people that you should send us for smicha. Lo tismuchu lana lo sarmisin v'lo min smartitin. Don't send us sarmisin and smartitin, or lo michamisin v'lo turmisin. The first two phrases refer to people who present halacha in an incorrect way or pervert the halacha, not necessarily intentionally, but they're not good students, right, or shmatas, right? So, but these are the kind of guys you want to send. Rabbi Avahu, ki avi atim mitif to the kesar. Rabbi Avahu lived in Caesarea, and he used to visit the Roman governor who lived in Caesarea, so he can come to the basement to be kesar. Nafkar of hata to be kesar lape, the servant girls of the governor's house would come out to greet him. Umashin lehachi, this is what they would sing. Rabba da ame, the master of his nation, umad barna du umate, the leader of his people, butsina de nahora, bright jewel, barich matiach l'shlam, blessed is your kabarach v'achal l'shalom. They greet him, a beautiful greeting. Amro Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Loi, the famous Rabbi Yehuda of the Tana, Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Loi. Shayan notel, now we're going back to the wedding. Shayan notel bad shal hadasim arkei defnei kala. He was the gadol ador, and he would take a myrtle branch and he would dance in front of the kala. V'yomer kala na b'chasuda. There's one of Yitzchak Merakid Aflat. He used to juggle. Rav Zera kamachsi flansava. Rav Zera said, the old man is embarrassing us. Embarrassing us here because it's like he's making Talmid Chacham look silly because he's doing these sort of silly things, and we're all embarrassed. But what happened? Rav Zera got his comeuppance. Kinach and Avshon, Rav Yehuda died. Ifsi kamuda de nura ben didei l'chuliyama. There was a pillar of fire between the body and the rest of the world. Ugumiri de lo afsi kamuda nura l'chad v'dor l'tre v'dor. Only one or two people in a generation have such a wonderful thing happen to them, which indicates their divine favor, as it were. And here's a guy, he's a Talmid Chacham, who specifically took the position of being a Tzur Rabbanan, and apparently, but certainly not really, denigrated it by dancing in a somewhat silly way. Rabbi Zera hanyale shutita lasava. So what did Rabbi Zera say about this? The shutite, which means the myrtle. We're going to have a play on words. Shutite, the myrtle, helped the old man. V'amrila shtute lasava. Or perhaps the silliness, shtut. V'amrila shitate lasava. Or perhaps the approach. Meaning, his shita, his approach, and his custom is what saved him. And anyway, Rabbi Zera made some comment where he said that behavior at the weddings, whether it was the myrtle, the silliness, or his approach, all playing on the word shtut, is what helped him get this beautiful miracle of the pillar of fire. Avachi markiv la katfeu marakid. This is something that is somewhat troubling. Avacha would take the kala on his shoulders and dance. The student said, should we do such a thing? Well, if the girl seems to you like just a piece of wood, then fine, v'lo lo. In other words, he's saying, I'm totally dead as far as my sexual senses here goes, and therefore I pick her up. If you feel the same way, fine. What he was basically saying to them was, no way. You're allowed to gaze at a kala for all 7 days. Because what happens, and I mentioned this, that there would be more of this, that the husband, he's just gotten married, he's nervous, he says he made the right decision, he sees that all the men are looking favorably on his wife, he says, oh, she must be beautiful, he gains that kind of validation, he will love her. But the late Hachatakavate, we don't rule like that, and indeed it's forbidden to gaze with such a gaze on a married woman who's married to somebody else. Tan Rabbanan, now we get into the issues of priorities within the context of a way. Mavirina tamet milifnei kala. This is something that we had in a whole different context on Daf Dalad, with the tragic story, the tragic case of the onus, which is for a wedding, one of the fathers, the father of the groom or the mother of the bride passed away. And here we're talking about when you have two parties. Right? You have a funeral procession and you have a wedding procession. So the mate has to take a back seat. But either one of them has to take a back seat if there's an entourage of the Jewish king. But then there's a story that seems to contradict that. Agrippas, the famous king of the first century, who the Chachamim favored, and they were happy with a lot of things that he did. He walked in front of the kala. Right? And they praised him. Shibchu Michal de Shapir Avad. Shavram Mifnei Kala, it actually means that he moved out of the way and allowed the Kala to go in front of him. And even though the rule is the king should go first, he allowed the wedding procession to go first. And he was there with an entourage and he let the wedding procession go in front of him. Shibchu Chacham de Chacham praised him. Shibchu Michal de Shapir Avad. Obviously, that means he did the right thing. Yamavashi Afilu Manda Manasi Shemachal Kvodam Kvodamachul. So Ravashi said, this is a whole sugi in Kiddushin. The very end of the sugi goes through father and teacher and abbasin, etc. Also, different people who are deserving of kavod, they have the right to be mochel the kavod, to forego the kavod, right? But the halacha is that a nasi shemachal kavod, the head of the Sanhedrin, wants to mochel his kavod, so you don't have to stand up for me, etc. Kavodo machol, melech shemachal kavod, ain't kavodo machol. The king doesn't have the right to forego. Why? Demar mar. Take a look at the second pasuk on the page. You shall place over you a king, if that's what you want, then indeed you have to place one properly. What does that mean? It has to be someone who is awe, and the fear of him is over you, which means you cannot allow him to behave in a way that lessens that. Right? So how could Agrippa Samelech let the Kala go in front of him? He doesn't have the right, it's not within his purview to forego that honor. The answer is Parshat Drachim Aveh. It was a crossroads. In other words, it wasn't that he stood by and then let the kala go. They met at a junction and he said, let the kala go in front. And the Chacham praised them for that. Tana Rabbanan. Now this is another piece, which is a sugya closely related to the sugya at the beginning of Masechet Megillah, about the role of Talmud Torah vis-a-vis other mitzvot, in which case Talmud Torah is suspended in order to fulfill other mitzvot. Vatling Talmud Torah lo tzat hamet u'lachnasat kala. We suspend learning in order to participate properly in a funeral or in lahavdil, in a celebration of a wedding. Amru al Rabbi Yehuda by Rabbi Eloi, the famous Rabbi Yehuda, Shem Vatel Talmud Torah, though Tzatam and Achatzat Kala. So it's not just a theoretical halacha. He would suspend the studies in his Beit Midrash in order to go out to attend to a funeral or to a wedding. Now, by Medzvar Memorim, when is that the case? She'ein imo kol sarko. That's when the mate, and we're only talking about the mate, does not have a proper entourage, a proper funeral procession. But yesh imo kol sarko, but if there are sufficient people there, just wait a second, you'll see what sufficient is, ein mevatli. V'chama kol sarko, what is the kol sarko? Shomar eini, mishmei derav, so Rav said, tracer alfi gavri, 12,000 men, v'shita alfi shipuri, and another 6,000 criers, heralds, who are announcing the funeral. The Amri La, and some people say, Tlesar Alfe Gavri, it's 13,000 men, And of them, 6,000 are the criers. But either way, it's a huge amount of people. Ula says, without giving a number, says if there were people who would just fill in the space from Avula all the way to the bridge. I don't know how far that is. Rav Sheshet, and how many people that would be, but it's thousands. Rav Sheshet, Vitem Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Netilata ki Netinata. He said a very simple thing. The taking back of a soul is like the giving. Ma Netinata, meaning the taking back of this person's Torah is like the giving of the Torah. Matin Netinata, Vishishim Ribo, just like there were 600,000 people at the giving of the Torah. Af Netinata, Vishishim Ribo, similarly when the soul is taken back, and a person is buried, you need Shishim Ribo, Vahani Mili Lamanda Kari Vatani. All of this is just the honor for somebody who studied Mikra and studied Mishnah. Avalamanda Matni Lately Shir, but somebody who actually taught, there's no Shir, meaning that as many people have come, it's still not enough. Everybody has to come, which means in all circumstances, you're going to suspend teaching. I can still remember Halachalama said, we were studying this exact Sugya in Yeshiva Kerem Biavna, this is back in 1977 or 78, when we heard that Rav Zsolti, who was the Rav Rashi of Yerushalayim, Zatzal, had passed away, and we got immediately under the discussion about whether we should leave the yeshiva to go to the Levaya, knowing that there would be a large crowd. And nonetheless, because of this halacha, Laman Dematni, he was somebody who was a Rav Rashi and taught, etc., we all went to the Levaya based on our understanding of the sugya. Good. So we go back to our analysis of the Mishnah. The Mishnah said that if we have witnesses that she went out with a heinuma. Remember, I promised in the last podcast that we would now get to what a heinuma means. So my heinuma, what is it? Surcha bar papa mishmei deziri amar tanura da'asa. It's like a myrtle wreath or myrtle laurel. A myrtle crown. Rav Yochanan amar karita de menamna bakalta. It's like a very thick veil. She's sleeping, meaning you can't even see if her eyes are open. That's how thick of a veil it is. Again, these are things that were only worn by a betulah, and therefore it was good testimony that she'd been a betulah and that she gets the matayim. Now, back in the Mishnah, B'Yochanan Brukomer, Af Chilu Klayot, he said there was also a custom that they would pass out toasted grain, and that was a good raya. So, Tana B'Yehuda raya. So, we have a braita that says that's a raya in Yehuda. Bavel Mai. So what do we do in Bavel? We have other customs. What are good proofs? What are the prevalent customs in Bavel that are uniquely practiced at the wedding of Tula and as such provide testimony that she should get Matayim? Marav Darduge Demashcha Reshad Rabbanan. The women would come and rub oil onto the heads of the students at this wedding. Mashcha the Chavifuta Kamamar. You're saying rubbing almost like a shampoo? Amale Yatma. Now this is very ironic. Abaye turns to our papa and calls him an orphan. Abaye, of course, as we know, was a double orphan. He was born, his father died while he was in utero, and his mother died when she was giving birth to him. And he's called our papa, who, if recall from Masechet Yevamot, Abaye sort of poked fun at the fact that our papa had these parents who took care of him so much. So he called him Yatma, you orphan, as if you have no one to teach you. Lo avdalach imach darduge mashcha resh rabbon v'shat maaseh. Didn't your mother ever take care of rubbing this oil into your head at a wedding? Kihada umer rabbonan di yasik le lebre be'rava bar ula. There was a particular student who was making a wedding for his son in the house of Rav bar ula. Amir la bar ula yasik le lebre be'a umer rabbonan. Or Rav bar ula was taking care of his own son's wedding at somebody else's house. Either way, Rav bar ula is in the play. And just at the time of the chuppah, the women put oil on the heads of the rabbanan, and that was clearly a very common custom in Babel. I'm sure there are historians who can explain why such a custom existed and perhaps what its roots are, but all we know is that it's a custom, which means that if somebody can come and testify that that happened at their wedding, they'll get matayim. Now, amalta mai. So what would they do at the wedding of an alwana to distinguish it? If you recall, in the previous braita, they said that they would have a different kind of barrel or something. Here, what would they do? Tanur of Yosef, Hamalta Leit Lakisni. At a wedding of an almanah, they don't hand out toasted corn. That's the siman. The siman is there isn't none of these festive type things with oil and corn and wine or whatever it may be. Of course, that raises a question that we had earlier, which is, can't the girl come and say, I deserve matayim? They didn't have it. The munchies was closed. The candy store was closed. The wine store was not serving that kind of wine. Can she claim such a thing? Evidently not. And evidently the fact that there was none of this stuff at the wedding would be good proof that she indeed was an almanah and could not claim matayim. So we have completed this podcast. Ritz Hashem will continue in the next podcast from the Suga of Yeshua and the Pesha Asar Peshi Tir, and conclude next podcast by concluding the Sugya on Daf Yud Chet Amud Bet at the Mishnah in the middle of the Amud. Everybody should have a wonderful day.